Welcome to the Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. My name is Lucy.
And my name is Spencer.
And this is the... Oh, thanks for joining us for our weekly conversation on all things childhood, child development, and everything related to childhood.
Each week,
did I say childhood twice?
You say childhood a few times. We really like childhood.
And childhood?
And children.
And also each week. Childhood. Okay, sorry. Go.
So any childhood. Each week we discuss a subject that excites us as much. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We're doing great tonight. We've had a few conversations already.
You returned.
I could not make it work.
And your face afterwards, like,
because in my head, I was like, you're saying it. And it's like, no, oh mouth, gosh. You're not saying it.
Oh, each so week, funny.
What do we moach the most? Each week, we discuss a topic that we are enthused by and we hope excite you and enthuse you as well. So today, we are talking about, I'm really excited about this because this is combining three things I love. It's art, love it, children, love it, and clothing, because I love clothes. I love the way that clothing is an identifier, a personality trait in many ways. I'm just a big old clothing fan. I work with it. I couldn't say enough about how much I love clothes. So as we get closer to summer, I don't know about you, Lucy, but I feel like synonymous with summer. Summer clothing, summer wardrobes is the tie-dye t-shirt.
Yep.
I mean, come on. Like, it's literally like that is the summer wear. So if you haven't read the episode title yet for tuning in, we are talking about dye techniques, D-Y-E, dye, and ways to engage your child in dye-based activities that are best suited for warm weather. Why is it important to talk about dyes through children? Well, did you know that over 90% of clothing today is dyed synthetically? This means two things when it comes to the importance of discussing dye with your children. First, it touches their lives constantly because the clothes that you are probably wearing right now.
It touches their lives constantly.
Uh-huh. Quite literally. Just listeners, Lucy, touch what you're wearing right now. I could bet you, unless you are some cool, kitschy, like living off the earth individual, you are wearing a synthetically dyed piece of clothing right now. This creates a fascinating conversation with your children in regards to color and the identity of the clothing that we wear. So I'm personally fascinated by clothing and the way we wear it and how it defines our personalities. It's our representation. You don't pick a color that's thing to wear because you hate the color. You pick it because you love the color or what's on the item of clothing or how it sits on you. And if you're not wearing something you love, I'm sorry.
I have to tell a story. One, I'm sending you a picture. It might not work. And my internet is really weird. And so I had to take a screenshot of like lots of pictures, but it's the picture in the middle of John and I, one year with our friends, like our couple friends, we, tie-dyed, 4th of July firecracker shirts. So
cute.
We matched and it's so cute, but it's not really sending. Anyways, but the other thing
comes through,
I just feel like you would appreciate this, fashion-y. So we, 98% of our clothing, I think, of Leo's clothing is hand-me-downs, which is really awesome.
It is awesome.
But
sustainable fashion.
Yeah. But he has this one shirt, I think is the tackiest shirt in the entire world. And that's what you get when you have hand-me-downs and you don't get to choose them. But it's this shirt of this, isn't it so cute?
That's so us
and
cute.
Our little matching tie-dye.
That's so cute. Oh, yeah. You guys are too cool. I love it.
So cute. But it's a little, like, it's a picture of this dinosaur wearing sunglasses and he has a backpack on, and the backpack is like a clear, like, plasticky thing filled with sequins, like, that move around. And I think it's the tack, like, it's such an ugly little shirt. And I really could take it out because he has enough shirts, but every time he comes across it, because he picks out his clothes in the morning.
Yes, he should. Good for him.
Well, I don't have a say in this. This is not really a choice. I mean, like it's a good independent thing anyways, but like that's generally how I wake up in the morning is a butt naked Leo holding his clothes for the day.
That's so cute. God, I want a child. My dream. I'm gonna send you a TikTok child. I'm obsessed with her. Name is Ryder Bird, and her mother is obsessed with vintage clothing. So she only buys her child funky vintage clothes and lets her kid pick out all the combos. And perhaps this isn't real. Perhaps the mom is influencing it a little bit. They're always the sickest outfits, like the coolest color combinations. And I'm like, Ryder Bird, you little fashionista, like you get it. That's
funny. To be fair, I actually feel like, I don't know, a lot of children, when they start it really young, they kind of, I don't know. I'm just.
Well, you know, one thing I can't stand is, I won't say can't stand. Makes me a little like sheepish for agreeing with it is when a child walks in with a funky, funky outfit and the parent goes, yeah, they dressed themselves this morning. And I'm like, oh, like that's great. You're telling me they picked their own identity today? Like, love it. That's so cool.
I do feel a need a lot of the time, though, to be like, not a lot of the time, but occasionally to be like, he picked out his outfit today, just so you know, like.
he's not wearing purple stripes with green to neon polka dots.
But actually, like, again, some of the combinations, he'll originally pull them out and I'll be like, oh my goodness. And then I'll put them on him and I'll be like,
like, okay, dude, hey, like, that's, you did actually it
real good. Like, you're right. Well, that was really good.
Could I argue that psychologically on two fronts? First off, we all know when they hit 2 and 3, or you should know, they hit this rebellion. The logical side of the brain starts developing, and the need to argue and win in arguments and to be independent thrives. So perhaps if one of the losing battles you picked that day was letting your child choose the clothing they wear, and that's their biggest win of the day. Man, imagine that saving you a whole day's worth of arguments.
Yeah.
Like they got to win that big battle.
Ease up a little bit. Yeah. Like that means you get to win at least one more of those arguments.
Oh, perhaps you could even like fully like start the win. Be like, offer them an outfit you know they're not going to love and let them go, no, I actually would rather do insert this. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, that'd be very interesting. So,
I do love keeping like the, like Leo already has it picked out by the time he comes to me in the morning because it's at so a child cute. Level. Like it's just as a really easy way to give them an end. So they start their day feeling like I did it. I'm the one like, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, but yeah, I can't get rid of the shirt because every time he comes across it, he like will be like, Mom, this dinosaur is wearing a backpack. Oh, and he just dies laughing so every time. He thinks it's the funniest thing. And so, yeah, it's like his favorite shirt. And so I have to wear it. And it's fine that he has a super hideous shirt because it makes him so happy.
I actually love that. That is so cute. Lucy, what if instead of dressing my future child in super fashionable clothing, I only bought them the cheesiest of clothing? And that's my fashion for my child. Like live, laugh, love shirts. And like,
well, it's really like kind of a weird line though. Like, cause there's this girl, I don't know her personally, but she's my friend's friend that like, she didn't want her son to have to like choose to wear normal clothes, like have that be a choice later or choose to wear like dresses. So she like straight up dressed her baby in like really frilly pink dresses, like from the moment he was born and stuff like that. And so that he could like anything he wanted to wear would be normal for him to wear. And yeah, that's too much for me. Like, I was not willing to do that. That's not what I wanted to do. I want it to be very, very obvious that like, he is allowed to wear whatever he wants to wear. And that doesn't define his gender, that like he gets to choose what he wants to do.
Identifying gender as clothing is one thing I struggle with as someone who's hyper feminine and enjoys hyper feminine clothing, because I struggle with the idea of how will I not put that upon my own daughter, if I have a daughter, to not hyper feminize her. But at the same time, how will I construct myself to give my own little boy clothing that it's complicated.
I even struggle with this a little bit, and I'm sorry. Then we have to not be on a tangent anymore. Sorry. But this is just such an interesting topic, because like, my favorite color is pink. Leo's favorite color he recently has decided is blue, which it's a really good color on him. Like, it's a really good color. And we dress him in a lot of blue because he has blue eyes. Also, we get a lot of gendered clothing, but like, it looks so good on him when we have stuff on him because of his eyes. So like, it's anyways, but it's just like, and then there's a lot of stuff that like John and I are kind of like gendered, and like, maybe a lot of it is influenced by our circumstance, but like where like I work with children and John works, like, is doing the medical route, where like, it just feels, and it's like, cause I don't feel that way, but that is what we're portraying. It's like really kind of gendered things. It's like,
It's so interesting how gender roles can fall a certain way. Like, I'm obsessed with this one girl on TikTok. I can't think of her name. She is a lawyer. She's a redheaded, very beautiful lawyer, and she wears bright pink clothing to all of her law school classes to prove a point that she can be hyper feminine and have hyper feminine color attributes, but be at the same level of her male colleagues.
Red hair and bright pink.
That's, oh, she looks
combination
stunning. My goodness. I wish I could think of her name. It's one of those people, I'm going to cut this part out because it's just annoying to talk about. You ever have those people that you follow on, or you see on TikTok, maybe Instagram, you really don't care about them that much, but whenever they pop up, you're like, oh, like, that is interesting. So, but yeah. Okay. So it's important to talk about dye with children because it's how we represent ourselves. And I love this conversation because exactly, we choose these bright colors, or we choose the neutral colors because we want to give our child a way to apply a little bit of, you know, personality to themselves. And on a darker note, it's important to discuss dye with our children because emphasis on the fact that 90% of our clothing is synthetically dyed. Synthetic dyes means it's chemically dyed, and this creates an incredibly high amount of harmful runoff. And it's predicted that over 10,000 different dyes are used industrially, which means that there's over 735 tons of synthetic dyes produced annually. Wow. Worldwide today. So if we're talking sustainable fashion and creating a world for children, we need to reinvigorate the idea of natural dye and the ways in which we use dyes. I'm not going to get into it too long. I was just fascinated by this, the history of dye, because I do have a small defense for synthetic. We've just talked about the fact that 90% of our clothes are synthetically dyed and how important it is to identity. We've been dyeing fabrics for over 4,000 years. It's literally what started a lot of human civilization. Cool. We started using color to identify status, allegiance, and gender. Some people may have read the fun fact that back in the old days, pink was actually the male identifier and blue was the female identifier, because pink was seen as white honor and purity combined with red strength and vigor. That was pink, was seen as a male color, and blue was seen as a relaxing feminine color.
Submissive kind of a...
Yeah, I've never quite read about when that switched, so that if anybody knows, I'd be fascinated. But so clothing has always been, and specifically fabric, has always been an identifier throughout human age. The first ever clothes were whites and grays from natural fabrics like linseed and cotton, and the first dyed colors were red and orange. Dyes are made from minerals, animals such as insects and shellfish, and vegetables. And the most expensive dye throughout history was Tyrian purple. And this came from a sea snail that was only found in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea by the city of Tyrian. It was so rare and expensive that only the royals could use it. And that's why today purple is associated with royalty.
I feel like that. We haven't had one of these episodes in a little while of these like Spencer history dropping these fun facts.
I love history, I love it. Art, and I love this topic.
This is so cool. I did not know that. That's so cool.
Well, and I'm about to get into the social part of it, which like this gets me so invigorated. Throughout history, only the wealthy could wear bright colors because they could afford it. And the lower class could only wear shades of white or brown. And it makes sense because who has the time and money to soak fabric in these rich dyes or to collect these rich dye tones? If you were a peasant, all you could wear was the browns or the whites of the natural fabrics. So when the first synthetic dye was found in the mid-19th century by Dr. William Henry Perkins, who was looking for a cure for malaria, he discovered the color mauve through one of his chemical compounds. And if anybody knows that, mauve is one of the key components of printer ink. Mm-hmm. So synthetic dyes in all technicality opened up the ability for common people to finally be on the same level as the rich. And small tangent, I'm not going to get too much into this. Fast fashion is terrible for the environment, but arguably fast fashion has put the poor on the same level as the rich in terms of fashion and identity, because suddenly poor people are able to buy excitable clothing and outfits that they might not have been able to afford 50 years ago. I don't know if I'll leave this in because it's kind of off topic, but I just heard a great article by the World Health Organization that obesity levels are rising at a dramatic rate in Europe. And it's a, I never thought about this way. The health specialist was explaining that surprisingly obesity and starvation can go hand in hand in countries because if you don't have the access to proper food sources, health management, obesity can be just as strident as poverty, as starvation in the same like geographical area. I was fascinated by that. So accessibility, it means everything. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, on that note, I think it's important to have this conversation with your children, not necessarily the deeper parts we just discussed, but more so how let's stop stigmatizing clothing as this, just, it's a sheltering aspect. It is a necessity for certain lifestyles, but it can also be an expression and it will affect them in life in some way.
And it's always good to know the source. Like it's good for children to know where food comes from. And like, it's good for adults to understand where food comes from and things like that. So understanding where your clothing comes from and how it's made are just like really, it's good to know the source of everything. So you can appreciate it more and just understand it.
Well, like some subjects we're going to get into, and I'm going to make these some three significant bullet points. It's going to teach them to value their clothing more, as in take care of it better. Wash it, take care of it. They're not throwing it on the floor. It's something that they value, not something that they're ripping or staining. They can, but they're going to understand the value behind it. And number two, you know, they're just going to understand. Oh, I lost my train of thought completely. They're going to understand. We're going to get into this more, but using the dye technique specifically in relation to fabric and clothing, how the natural world can give back to us. So we're going to discuss how, speaking of food, how you can use your food scraps to give them a second life and dye techniques. There's a lot of factors of dye and fabric usage that can really apply on many overall scales. And finally, this conversation is going to talk about how we can be self-identifiers. I'm really big about dye techniques, color and fabric in that sense. It's self-identifying, how you choose to control an environment and identify yourself based on the colors that you choose. So color theory. Whoop, whoop. The first dye process I want to talk about, we've talked about this many times throughout our very early episodes and some recent ones, it is cyanotypes. So truly one of my favorite artistic techniques. I'm not going to get too much into this because we've talked about it in so many episodes, but beyond just being a very good dye technique, it is one of the best examples of dye in history. Technically, cyanotypes aren't a dye process at all, but a photographic process. It's not only that you're learning a dye technique with your child, but you're also learning about one of the oldest printing processes in the history of photography.
Oh,
it was a botanist and scientist who discovered cyanotypes. This was John Herschel. And he worked with fellow botanist and photographer Anna Atkins to create photographic albums using this technique. The dye is created by combining ferric ammonium citrate, potassium ferrous cyanide, to make an iron-rich sensitized solution that can be brushed over a porous surface, whether that's paper or fabric. The sensitized chemical reacts to light, causing any of the chemicals that are exposed to sunlight to turn into a brilliant blue, thus the name cyan, cyanotype. Cyan is a type of blue. Anything that's not exposed to the sunlight, for example, a leaf placed over the paper or a hand placed over that dyed fabric, it will simply rinse away and have not synthesized. And the process will stop once it's washed in water. This project is so simple in the way that you create it. And so it makes it perfect to examine with children, though notably the chemicals are not suitable for children. But it is made safe by the adult dyeing the paper or fabric beforehand and the child then using the dried fabric or paper. Of course, keeping it out of sunlight until you do so.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating example of chemistry at work and photosynthesis as your child watches with delight as the object they place to block the sun's rays creates a blindingly stark image on the cyano-dyed fabric or paper. Notably, paper is the most simple way to perform this project, but dyed fabric is the most interesting. I once dyed a white dress with cyanotype dye, which notably is the ugliest green before it's been processed. And then I placed little cutouts of bicycles all over it. So when I washed the dress after having laid it out in the sun for a while, I had a bright blue dress, white bicycle all over it.
Oh,
it was
very so cute. Does it? Because a lot of natural dyes, they like fade really fast when you wash it. Is this a little bit more of a like really permanent?
I'll give two answers. The first is it is very permanent. I've heard and read great things about the dye holding very well. But personally speaking, any of the things that I have dyed have been gifts or I've outgrown them and had to reduce and recycle them. So that dress in particular, I only had it for a year. That was back when I was a 00. I could not fit into that. Geez. Like, yeah, back in the old days. So that dress does not exist anymore as far as I know.
Interesting.
But a fun project I've seen float around the internet, speaking of dyeing the fabric and if it lasts a while, I feel like this implies that it does. I've seen schools make school flags by dyeing massive swaths of fabric in the cyanotype dye, releasing it out in a field, and then having the children of like a graduating class lay out on the fabric. Then when they up, their image is immortal. Isn't that cool? So save the fabric. Yeah, it's a great end of year class project. Like, great way to get everyone involved.
Oh, that's huge. What did they do with that?
I don't know. They said it was a flag. This is a project I've seen a long time ago because if you look up cyanotypes for children, it pops up a lot. It's like a big king size flat sheet. And kids will be lying on it. And then voila, they wash it. And wow, it's all their outlines. It's very interesting. So, and notably, this project only works best with strong sunlight. If there's weak sunlight, it takes a really long time for the dye to process. So another good reason why we're talking about this as we get into summer, because this is a great time of year to do cyanotypes. In summer, it will likely take 5 to 10 minutes to develop. I've done this project in the dead of winter. It takes like 20 to 50 minutes for a dye to develop. It's very tedious. And with young children, like, you're not getting that great instant dyeing fabric with children, speaking of which. Now that I mentioned cyanotypes, we can use that solution to dye fabric, but let's talk about child-friendly dyes that your child can actually help you make to dye a fabric piece. I first want to mention, Lucy, I thought about this idea as I was typing this out. How cool would it be, regardless of the dye type or how we're going to make it, to create a foraging tapestry Mm-hmm. What I mean by this, mm-hmm. spend a few months with your child collecting materials and creating dies out of them. Then slowly dye swaths or squares of a large tapestry piece until the whole thing is covered in your collection of homemade dyes. I was just thinking about how cool that would be.
So cool.
Like you come home and you're like, okay, today like we found some bark on the road. We're going to crush it up and boil it and make a dye. And it's like, wow, like it was terrible. That didn't work. Like, are you, you know, like, it's just like, what works? So
That's so cool. Oh, I love that.
Like my dyed life or something like that, you know? So, but speaking of that, what fabrics do you use? Let's think about that. You know, you're getting ready to do this fun project, cyanotypes. You're getting ready to make some natural dyes, but wait, what's the right fabric to use? There's many things that can go wrong with your dye techniques, but the first thing that can go right is using the right material to dye upon. This becomes a great conversation on scientific principles with your child. You can use a dish rag or sponge as an example to show your child how porous a porous object can better absorb a liquid versus perhaps, I don't know, like show them how, I'm trying to think something really obviously bad. You pour water on a cup, it's not going to absorb into the cup.
I was going to say better. A plastic Easter egg.
Look at you.
Which also a very weird example, but.
No, but it's just, you know, you're showing your child point blank how much easier the porous subject absorbs liquid. That's the whole point you're trying to get across. So these factors become helpful when explaining other ideas like germs or washing your clothes. It's a great overall lesson that things absorb. And so we need to clean them. So I was thinking about how that could be nice.
Yeah.
So it directly helps your child to understand how and why dyes work. Almost all of your fabric dyeing questions can be answered by these three base principles. A, synthetic fabrics cannot be dyed. I'm not even going to get into it. There are some synthetic blends that can be dyed. We're not going to touch that. Most natural fabrics fall into two categories, able to be dyed in every way or only able to be dyed by hand. In other words, we have to establish whether a fabric is natural or synthetic to decide if it can be dyed. In the case of blended fabrics, which is when it's half synthetic or half natural, it's how much of it is natural to understand whether or not it can be dyed successfully. Okay. As a group, natural fabrics are very accommodating to permanent color. The vast majority can be dyed with amazing results. And so the most common of these natural fabrics are cotton, linen, viscose, denim, flax, jute, rami, and canvas. Duh. A few natural fabrics prefer to be washed by hand and do better with colored hand dye are silk, wool, cashmere, and mohair. Personally speaking, I've tried dyeing wool. It's really, really frustrating because you think that it's very absorbent. You think it would work better. It's like it absorbs it, then washes right out almost immediately.
Interesting.
So, fun fact. So for the most part, natural fabrics are the ideal dye candidates. So you can dye your cotton shirts, your canvas shoes, and linen with no issues. I'm going to add this picture into one of our Instagram posts. This is a quick guide for plant-based textile dyes. Lucy, do you want to go back and forth on this image? Because I'm going to get bored reading this long one together. Mm-hmm. Okay. Ready?
Yes. Onion skins.
Artichokes.
Red cabbage.
Avocado seeds.
Spinach.
Olives. Mm.
Lentils.
Don't know how about that one, but interesting. Yeah. Bay leaves. Makes sense.
Holy basil.
Okay. Rosemary.
Mm. Paprika.
Fennel.
Some seeds.
That's not very descriptive. It's so random.
I was like, is there a plant called some?
Or we're not going to tell you which ones.
Some seeds.
Okay, this one feels so obvious. Saffron. Yum.
Also kind of obvious, I think. Turmeric.
Like the most go-to. That stuff dyes your skin. Pomegranate rinds, not seeds, the rind.
Elderberry.
Mm, Cherries.
Also kind of obvious. Teas.
Yeah. Yeah. Coffees. Yeah.
Blueberries.
Mm-hmm. Strawberries.
Blackberries.
Grape skins.
Chamomile.
Mm. Sunflower.
Camellia.
Camellia.
Camellia. Oh, okay. As a nature person. Ooh, okay.
I used to have a few.
Okay.
Calendula.
Crocus.
Iris.
Daffodil.
My favorite. Lilac.
Banksia cones.
Hyacinth.
Oh, I love hyacinth. Dandelion.
Cornflowers.
Marigolds.
Hydrangea.
Rosella.
You keep getting the weird ones.
Yeah. Goodness. Also, as like, I'm like a home taught nature person. And so I read some of these and then I don't know how to pronounce them.
Some bugs. I can't stand that. I'm going to skip.
Some bugs.
It's like what? Matter root.
Logwood.
Ornamental plum leaves.
Hmm. Some lichens.
Annatto. Don't know what that is.
Mm-mm. Don't know either. Mm. Acorns.
Oak galls.
Bamboo.
I thought that was lightning first. Lightning. The cloud.
No, I totally could see it. Yeah.
And indigo, which is another herb substance. So.
Oh, I was like, that's a color. Why would you use like that?
Red is a great dye. And just to go off of some a little more, I know you guys.
So are just gone through a bunch of these different things to make orange, clarets, and lichen, natural substances that can be used for dyes. Let's identify them now and sort them by colors and what will give you the color that you're seeking. So Lucy, do you want to go back and forth on these colors?
Orange, you can do from carrots, gold lichen, and onion skins.
Brown can come from dandelion roots, oak bark, walnut hulls, tea, coffee, and acorns.
Pink, from berries, cherries, red and pink roses, avocado skins, and seeds.
Makes sense. Blue comes from, again, indigo, the herb, the substance. Woad, I don't know what that is. Red cabbage, elderberries, red mulberries, blueberries, purple grape skins, dogwood bark.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Red, brown, pomegranates, beets, bamboo, hibiscus, reddish color flowers, and bloodroot.
Gray, black comes from blackberries. Walnut hulls, again, it depends on how long you boil them for, and iris root.
Okay. Red, purple, red sumac berries, basil leaves, daylilies, pokeweed berries. Oh, that's a cool one. And huckleberries.
I have to say, one of my all-time favorite drinks I've ever had, there is a beautiful little restaurant called the Betsy up in DC, and they make a specialty basil syrup that can be added to coffees, cocktails, anything in between, and it's a bright purple because it's made out of basil leaves.
Interesting.
Right?
Because I would assume
it's something about the basis.
I would assume green, yeah.
But I know. It's weird, right?
That's like, I just saw a video. I love, we do a little bit of foraging, and my favorite is Black Forager. And she's pretty fun. Anyways, but she just posted a video like today that you can take grape hyacinth. I like just the flower parts of it.
Okay.
And soak it in like boiling water for a couple of days, and it will turn like really, 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 really blue. And then you can pour it into lemonade, and it will turn it into like, it's a pH indicator. So it will turn it really, really, really bright pink.
I love that. That is so cool. Well, if you do it, let me know, please. And thank you. So,
I might, because apparently it's pretty good. Like,
is she the TikToker with the gap teeth?
Yeah. And she's like, loud and crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I love her. One of those I don't follow, but I like when she pops up. I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah. Hey, you.
Don't die.
Like, oh, yeah, God.
she's so funny.
Jeez. Oh, God. It's like, please be careful. The color green comes from artichokes, sorrel roots, sorrel? Spinach, sorrel, peppermint leaves, snapdragons, lilacs, grass, nettles, plantains, and peach leaves.
Okay. I was just like, so are you going to go into how to kind of process these a little bit more? Okay. Okay. I was going to ask some questions, but I'll hold them. Okay. Yellow, bay leaves. Don't bay leaves? No, we talked about basil. Okay. Yellow, bay leaves. That makes sense. Marigolds, sunflower petals, St. John's wort.
Also a good, I think it's good for stomach problems.
I'm not really familiar with that.
That's some kind of
power. Dandelion flowers, paprika, turmeric, celery leaves, lilac twigs, Queen Anne's lace roots.
Love Queen Anne's lace.
Me too. Mahonia roots, barberry roots, yellow root roots, and yellow duck roots.
I just included a few pictures that Lucy and I are able to see about the, we're going to get into how to turn these
up. So pretty.
Isn't that gorgeous? They're very faint, but I've included a picture of how these items lightly boiled with fabric can turn the fabric these beautiful shades. And they're very light and subtle, but lined up next to each other, they're quite powerful.
I've seen a couple of things from people doing egg dyeing this from Easter with the natural dyes, and they turn out really such a beautiful palette.
And when you think about how porous an egg is, it makes a lot of sense how it can soak in that nicely. So I wanted to get into that a little bit today, but I was like, no, I'm going to stick with fabrics. Like, I really thought about it. So
yeah, we're kind of past the season.
Yeah, I know. If we had done this earlier. Well,
no, it's fine. It's fine. Well, because maybe it would have gotten too focused on that.
And that's what I really wondered.
Something you can do whenever. So.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but it's good to keep in mind. Also, you can dye eggs whenever. We dyed them, dyed eggs. Leo got an egg dyeing kit for Easter because we had not had time to do it yet. And he's only two, so we don't have super established traditions, but you can dye eggs whenever you want to dye eggs.
See, there you go. And to make this dye for eggs or fabric, it's pretty simple, actually. You place the plant material natural material in a large non-reactive pot, so it's stainless steel or glass. And just remembering that the dyes can stain some pots and spoons, so you use these only for dyeing. Fill the pot with twice as much water as the plant material, so a 2-to-1 ratio. Simmer the plant and the water for an hour or so until the color is nice and dark, and then strain out the plant material and return the liquid to the pot. It's pretty straightforward. And this process tends to work on a pretty good 2-to-1 rule. It's just, it's gauge it. If it doesn't look like the pot, the color is that dark, boil it a little longer. If it looks like it's already pretty starched, stop the boiling process. You don't want to lose that color or burn it. So it's all about gauging because, you know, the amount of plant you find or the season you find, and like, you know, maybe the dandelion root is more potent in April than it is in May. It really just depends on when you're looking for it and it to determine how long it's going to take. So
cool.
Yeah. And it's,
I have not, this is not something I've ever done before. I don't think actually. I'm really excited.
It's such a good, I'm trying to think when I did this. I did it for what we're going to get into next. There's only one time I've ever tried these processes, and there is a way to do the spoiling process in a very kid-friendly way. So it's recommended to put your fabric in a hole into this dye that you've just created out of the natural substances. I prefer hand painting with the kids because largely they've been left out of this conversation for now, except for the foraging part and the applying of the dye. Up until the boiling, it's all an adult-based substance.
Right.
So the point is that heat is what creates the chemical structure to turn the plant, to release the plant's color tones into the water. It's so let's talk about the next great summer activity and dye process, which is solar dyeing, because the sun is a great and very potent natural heat source. And with berries, especially, you can make a very strong and very natural dye experience. I actually use this technique at the Compass School. We found it to be very effective, except that it attracts a lot of unsavory bugs like gnats and maggots and fruit flies. So I'm going to get into that. To do this properly, you want to have a sealed container that is opaque like a glass jar. Fill it with berries and water, so enough berries to fill the whole container. You can use other substances, but berries are best.
Like opaque or like translucent?
I'm sorry, translucent. Oh my gosh, translucent, okay. Like a glass jar.
I just wanted to make sure. I was like,
oh my god, you want the sun to pass through. Well, actually, okay. You know what I was thinking about though? You could do like, I think it's to see the process. You could do like a metal container too that's sealed and like see,
yeah,
like
it would still get really well, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, maybe it does have to be opaque so it gets like water, but
no, it's supposed to be that you can see through, but now I think about it, I think it's just for watching the context happen. So yeah, you fill it with berries are ideal because berries break down more than other substances do, and enough water to cover the substance, the berries. You place it outside in a sunny spot for up to 3 days. And after 3 days, you strain your berries, squishing them just a little bit to release the color just a bit more. Add a bit of alum powder. We talked about this last week in the natural art in nature. Alum just allows the substance to thicken up a little bit. And or you can even use cornstarch. It thickens it up. And you have an amazing fabric dye. I did this with pre-K and up at Compass. We used a big bucket and did like a grape stomping experience. All the kids took off their shoes. They all got permission forms.
I love
it. And we stomped the berries with our bare feet, creating a solution that baked in the sun. Here's the problem. We did it in a big bucket that was exposed to the elements in the sun. Mm-hmm. So it was great until the bugs came. But what did work, however, was that we did what's called the, there's some more technical term for this. I call it the ombre creeping effect. You can do this. It's a really popular science project where like you've seen this, Lucy.
Osmosis.
Mm. And so you place a big white curtain. So like the substances we talked about, cotton, linen, you place a big curtain of whatever that material is, and the kids watch for a few days as it seeps up and up into the fabric, and the substance that they have created is now turning their curtain a new color. Mm-hmm. So Lucy, actually, little side tangent, Compass, you know those white curtains that are on the gazebo out there, if they're still there?
Mm-hmm.
That was from that process.
Okay. I don't know if they're still there, but they were at some point when I was out there. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
And what we did, Lucy, was we hung curtains on the wall and we put the container of berries next to the AC units so the kids couldn't get to it. So they watched the dye creep up the wall, but they couldn't touch anything. Like it was all, they could watch, but never. So every time they went up for recess, it was like, how's it doing? But the bugs really, really, really ruined it.
Yeah.
It became really unsavory. Ignore the next part I wrote. I was just like copying and paste because I was really excited about this one little subject.
I have some questions. One day I'll read ahead of time, and
I sent this to you so late, so I have.
Oh, that's true. That's your fault. I won't take credit for this. No, I wouldn't have read it anyway, so you're fine. But do you need to use them kind of immediately, or do they have sort of?
I thought I put this in somewhere, but I think I must have deleted it. We talked about this in last week's episode. The problem with natural dyes, and this is why synthetics win as an overall scale, they have such a short shelf life. You need to use them as soon as possible. Once on fabric, you can use starches or other, or you could rinse them to let it set and rinse the germs out, essentially. But the dyes in and of itself, they do not keep. There's very few ways to get them to keep. You could add some chemicals to them. You're turning them synthetic in that sense. So, they are immediate use. Good question.
Because like this, we always have marigolds in our garden to keep like, but like in our vegetable garden, we have lots of marigolds. Anyways, but like the best way to keep marigolds flowering for longer is to cut off the, you know, deadhead, the older ones. And so I was just thinking that would be a really, like, we have those a lot. We could make a big, but yeah, so that'd be a good idea to, I shouldn't save, like make some and save it until we have other colors. I should just, we just die.
Yeah. You just keep going. Yeah. That's also what makes that's why it would be project.
Cool. Yeah. But that's why it would be cool to do like a day, every day.
Yes.
You make one swatch or once a week or something. Yeah.
It could arguably even be a good winter project if you want to put a lot of effort in. I just feel like the problem with it is winter, a lot of brighter colors exist due to heavier photosynthesis. That's why we don't see a lot of bright flowers in winter. They die.
Right.
You'd have a harder time finding varied colors in winter. So you could still do this project, but you know, you'd run into a lot of a lot more trickiness. So
yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a really cool project to dive into, maybe like once a week and see what you can create over 52 weeks, over a year. Some great resource books to get you started. I love this one. It's beautiful to look into some of the pictures of it. We had a compass. This is A Weaver's Garden by Rita Buchanan. It's growing plants for natural dyes and fibers. It's literally a book that begins the history and use of plant fibers. And then it offers valuable hints on dyeing fibers and fabrics and how to use plants for cleaning textiles, even like how to use plants in every step of creating fiber and creating fabric.
So cool.
Isn't that fun? So, and it, every second, it even gives readers expert advice on fragrant plants for scenting and protecting textiles, how to use what plant materials you can use as tools, how to create a garden that contains cotton, flax, indigo, madder, some of these harder substances that we mentioned, and just much more. So it's this really amazing book that fully conceptualizes how to create a garden that can produce clothing.
That's very, very cool.
It's so in depth. It's not just like, here's how to grow, you know, blueberries and turmeric because dyes. It's like, no, like if you want to make some fabric, here's every step to make that fabric. So, and just, you know, it's great visuals, fun to read, highly recommend. Another one to consider is Wild Color, The Complete Guide to Making and Using Natural Dyes by Jenny Dean. It's one of the best resources on natural dyeing and just has some really straightforward and great examples on substances you use to dye materials generally. And also gives you some color shades, like gives you some really cool little graphics to help you identify and match the color shades that you end up creating. You've read through with us, you've read about these cool dyes. Let's talk about, you listened to this episode and you've turned it off now. Well, welcome back, because maybe your dye didn't work and you're really frustrated. So here's the reasons your natural dye project failed. And this is from a really funny website. Give me a second. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Okay. So it's only 15 reasons, by the way, not 25. Okay. I exaggerated. This is by a really good blog called Compost and Kava. The road less traveled, a spunky brunette tries to save the world with eco-friendly DIYs. She's an awful lot of fun. Love her articles. And this is her very spunky and aggressive, this is why your dyes may not have worked article. Number one, you picked a fugitive dye. I love this term. You dyed your fabric. It turned out gorgeous, vibrant, perfect. You patted yourself on the back. Sure, you'd never have to listen to this episode again. You hung your fabric on the wall, laid it on your dining room table, you wore it, and the next thing you know, that hue is disappearing faster than your last Tinder date. Love that quote. Surprise, you've been ghosted by a fugitive dye. Not all materials are stable enough for the permanent dyeing of textiles and will fade pretty much completely over a certain amount of time. Most berries fall in this category. Lucy, those white curtains that were on the playground that I mentioned? None of them have the tint anymore. Those were all berry dyed. The sun, okay. Well, the sun bleached them, but as do beets and rhubarb. So worried you've cooked up a bath of fugitive dye, your dyed textiles will keep longer if you keep them away from sunlight and hand wash them with gentle soap as sparingly as possible. Notably, jumping back up to that book, A Weaver's Garden, that was one of her points, was how to grow soap-based plants that will allow you to gently wash your fabrics. Okay. Two, I dyed, you picked a pH-sensitive dye. So look at you, you use one of the most popular substances, purple cabbage. I dyed my fabric. It was this amazingly beautiful color when I pulled it out of the dye bath. I went to rinse out the excess dye, and guess what happened? It changed color when it came in contact with the water. Hello, cyanotypes. Certain plant-based dyes are amazingly sensitive to pH and can change color on contact. So just bear that in mind.
Oh, like the grape hyacinth.
There's a good one.
pH indicator. Yeah.
And this writer specifically mentions that she lives in Florida and that Florida has a lot of very concentrated water. And maybe that's mm-hmm. why hers changes so much during her processes. Mm-hmm. Number three, your dye wasn't concentrated enough. You looked up those really fun dyes like avocado pits or like grape hyacinth or something like that, only for it to come out a really murky color that's not what you expected it to be. Some materials do render beautiful pigments, but you need a ton of them to do so. I have personally mm-hmm. been a victim to this. I tried making violet syrup with Evan because violets can grow in spats here in Virginia. You need to have a massive amount of violets to make that work. Number four, your dye base can't withstand heat and your material needs to be in a cold process bath. This writer ran into this problem with mulberries, which will stain just about anything it comes into contact with. However, when she went to make a hot dye bath with them, they quickly lost their color over a certain temperature, and the bath became instead a murky brown. You need to work on your temperatures when you're setting or dyeing your fabrics. Like, all of this is a game, you guys. It's all a fun game with your children to kind of say, what's working for us? Like, what is working for us to make this work? So temperature sensitivity is a huge one. We talked about this earlier, the fabric that you use. Try not to use vintage fabrics because a lot of them have been treated over decades to have a lot of chemicals on them. So they likely won't take a dye. So be careful finding that cool vintage piece and dyeing it. Same with synthetics. We talked about this earlier. Synthetics are not porous enough to absorb. Really just try to stick away from synthetics. You might have used the wrong process for your natural dye. You need to be very conscious that with certain items, you need to possibly look up a dye process for them. The boiling technique works generally, but it might be that you need a little added something for something else. So, and then finally, I love this. She says, who the heck knows? Pour some more wine and go with it. Like, amen to that. At some point, guys, friends listening, this is supposed to be a fun try and succeed or try and fail with your child. This is no stress. This should not be expensive. I like the idea of using a big tapestry or tablecloth because hopefully it's recycled or cheap. You're not concerned that one little bit's going to mess up the whole thing. Make an experiment out of it. Enjoy patching up your dyes. And don't try to make a lot of pressure out of your first or even first 15 dye projects. This is an experimental process and a great way to spend your summer.
Super cool, like, scientific method in real practice. Like, what color do we think this is going to dye it? Oh, let's try it out and see. And
Like back to the foraging tapestry. It's like, we gave you this fun list of substances, but like, go out and find something. Like,
I have a really cynical question and you can keep it in if you want to, or you can cut it out and it will be fine. But like, okay.
I'm nervous.
Is any of this dye actually permanent then though?
Technically speaking, anything can stain your clothes. How about that answer? Anything can stain your clothes long-term. I would argue, especially I was going to touch on this a little bit, back to the beginning of this episode, we talked about the first dyes. strongest dye hues are reds and yellows, notably in this whole project of things that can fail. And this is from someone who has made, she's made thousands of attempts and had a few failures. I noticed repetitively, she's mentioned my pinks didn't work out. My purples didn't work out. Everybody wants that brilliant purple or pink. You're going to have the best luck with your reds and yellows, reds, yellows, oranges. They are the strongest natural color. They exist the most naturally in terms of like their vibrancy. So you'll have better luck with turmeric and better luck with your cadmiums or your, what's the one we talked about earlier? Not hibiscus, saffron. Saffron's expensive though. So just to bear in mind, it's just like if you spill coffee on your white shirt, it probably will never fully come out again. There's certain things in this world that they will stain very in-depthly, and it's just a matter of deciding what you want to use and how permanent do you want it to be.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, I invigorate you to try this out this summer, Lucy. I'd be curious to see what you make. I know that Evan and I have been talking about doing some like sun dye techniques where you we've talked about doing this where you use lemon water on a dark black or brown, and you paint on a dark black or brown substance, lay it out in the sun, and let it naturally bleach using the lemon water.
Have you ever done that with your hair?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you decide to keep this in, definitely disclaimer, don't. That's actually super dangerous.
It fries your hair.
If you get it on your skin, you can get like really nasty burns from it.
But
I sure have used that.
So. Gosh, remember the sun and stuff?
Yeah.
The spray stuff was really fun. I don't know if that still exists or not. I feel like I've seen it recently. So, Lucy, do you mind if I finish this up?
Yeah, let's finish it up. That's just that's really cool. This is a cool
thing. Thank you. I feel like
but it sounds a little bit, it sounds a little bit sad. Like, it's probably not going to work.
I felt like we had to include this is what can go wrong, but man, it's so many things that can go wrong. Oh my gosh.
But I like knowing that too, though, instead of being like, yep, you're going to create these beautiful works of fashion. You're going to use a scientific method. This is just a really cool STEM activity to do.
Agreed. So consider this, you guys, for a fun summer alternative. Create your dyes as simply or as with great process as you would like, because that's our goal with Speckled Beads, is we hope this enthuses you as much as it enthuses us.
Thank you so much for listening to the Speckled Beads, a celebration of childhood. I almost started the episode again. My name is Lucy. We love to have you here as part of our community. Make sure you join us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and that's all, right?
That's it. Yeah, those are the main ones. Twitter one day. I don't think so. But yeah, this has been a pleasure, you guys. This is just our fun conversation, getting involved with you. We want to hear your comments, questions, concerns. Don't forget, if you would like to support us, you can buy us a coffee in our link attached to the episode. It always means a lot to us, because whether it's a coffee or a cup of tea or one of Lucy's Cokes or sparkling waters, those are always funny to me. We could have a nice burping episode. So consider that, you guys. And this has been an amazing time with you all. We hope that you enjoyed. And this is the Speckled Bees buzzing it's always the way.
Why do you always?
What's a good like dying song? Like, no, like dying fabric, not dying. Oh my gosh. No, Lucy.
I really thought
I thought you were doing the Star Wars Death March, because we're filming this the day after May the 4th be with you. Let's do that one. You know. Oh my gosh.